Top of the afternoon, brothers and sisters, and welcome to Homebrew Quick Tip Concentrate, a rapid fire of tips for the short attention span brewer. You know, of all the seminars you could have chosen here at HomebrewCon, this is one of them. This seminar is essentially a sequel to the Quick Tip Concentrate articles in Zymergy magazine from 2022 and 2025. Now, as these articles have mentioned, that if you brew long enough, eventually you'll get some bits of wisdom under your belt. So what we have today is a vetted collection of techniques and quick tip forms, never watered down, and ready for you to for your brewing cause. Hello, my name's Ron Minkoff, and with me, together again for the first time, is my Hogtown presentation partner and Simon to my Garfunkel, Denise Brake. Hello, Denise.
Hello, Ron.
Now, Denise has been brewing since 2017. She's a multi-award bling winner. She was an officer in the club. I'm going to tell you, she makes a mean goza. And, you know, also her ciders, not too shabby either. In fact, her ciders are so good.
How good are they?
Thank you. Ciders are so good. She was previously crowned Best of Show Champion at the She Brew Competition in Portland. And that means your ciders actually beat out all the beers, too.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. That's swell. You're okay.
And this guy, Ron, over here, has been brewing in the comfort of his driveway since 2003. He has multiple walls of bling. He is past president of the Hogtown Brewers, which actually won the AHA Radagast Homebrew Club of the Year during his watch. He is a Zymergy magazine contributor and a distinguished certified beer and mead judge. Distinguished. That's BJCP speak for your old.
No one doesn't. Maybe you're right. All right. Start our engines on pouring. You want to talk about that?
Yeah. So if we could get the first beer started, it's a Margarita Goza, and we will talk about that in a little bit.
Yes. All right. So, yeah, get those cups out. All right. So we got tips. You're in your seat, most of you. Let's open up that can of concentrate. All right. So the tips we're going to talk about today, if you could see them.
Show of hands.
Oh, that's right. All right. So enough about us. Let's talk about you.
Show of hands. How many of you have been brewing for less than a year? Okay. What about 1 to 10 years? Okay. More than 10 years.
Wow, look at all those distinguished brewers.
Distinguished brewers. Man.
Yeah. All right. So the tips we're going to talk about today are going to be in these broad categories. First, we're going to have you cheat like a home brewer. Then we're going to do tips for brew day, brew in a bag, post-brew day, and then we're going to bring it on home with home brew club guidance techniques. So let's do this. All right, cheat like a home brewer. Denise, lead us off.
All right, so, you know, commercial breweries are not allowed to add spirits to their beers due to manufacturing laws, taxes, you know, strict classification things. But that doesn't mean that you can't. I actually added a full bottle of Triple Sec to this Goza. Because I wanted it to have, you know, a little more orange character, some little zing to it.
Lime
and orange. And lime and orange peel in the boil, last 5 minutes of the boil, you know, to help get that little kick, too.
Man, and a whole bottle of Triple Sec. Yeah, you don't go small.
No.
No. who's like me, who's a fan of espresso martini meads? Man. Oh, yeah. Well, so while you're in Asheville, down the road, the Asheville Club has some of the best espresso margaritas. Try that before you leave town. So an espresso margarita, espresso martini What's in it? It's vodka, simple syrup, Kahlua, which is the spirit, coffee liqueur, and, of course, a strong coffee or espresso. So to make a mead version of it, you need a sweet mead. That basically takes care of the gin and simple syrup part. Then with a 1-to-2 ratio of Kahlua to a strong cold brew. Truth be told, though, I probably go more towards a 1-to-3. So we don't have that particular mead here as a sample today, but if you're going to club night, and I think you are, come by the Hogtown tent. We'll set you up. Okay, if you can read in between. So have you ever brewed an imperial stout, and maybe it's overly roasted or a little too bitter? Well, do the Hogtown Bill Edwards method. Grab a box from your local Mega Mart of a Cinnamon Toast Crunch, a hot bag, throw some in the hot bag and let it steep for at least a day. Try it out. What it'll do, it'll round out that bitterness or that dark malt bite, give it a interesting Cinnamon Toast Crunch flavor, and plus part of a balanced breakfast. Right. If you brewed a porter, stout, doppelbock, barley wine, or anything in that family, and you try it, and it comes out kind of bland, kind of thin, you know, bummer, here's how you can punch that up and fix that. Infuse it with a cold brew coffee, and don't be afraid to try out flavored coffee beans. Like vanilla, or molten chocolate, or hazelnut, or a pecan. You throw that in, do it in a French press at a ratio of 1 to 1.5 by volume to water. That is, for example, 1 cup of coffee beans before you grind them. Then infuse in 1.5 cups of water, put in your French press, give it at least 12 hours, pasteurize it in a small pot, and then put whatever amount you think works into your keg for that batch that's kind of bland, and give it a shot, try it out. You'll also find that it'll help the body or the perception of the body in that batch.
So I was making just regular apple cider for the longest time. And I was like, you know what? I want to try some different flavors. So I went to my local grocery store, looked down the juice aisle, and I discovered, man, I think I want to try to make some strawberry banana cider. And, you know, 5 gallons later, and this is the one that won me best of show in Portland. And I didn't even back sweeten it. And I just added, I think, maybe a pound of brown sugar. Did not back sweeten it at all, and they absolutely loved it. They even said, man, I could taste the rind of the strawberry in there. And I'm like, and Juicy Juice, it's 100% juice. So, you know, go to your store, look down the juice aisle, see what you want
to
make.
All right, so to be clear, you didn't use some apple juice and then infuse it with Juicy Juice.
Nope.
It's 100% Juicy Juice.
100% Juicy Juice.
All right, you heard it.
Oh, so we know that Philly Sour has been around for quite some time. If you've ever wanted to try out a sour, without having to go through like a 2-day-long process of, you know, you got to brew it, then you got to hold it at temp with your lacto, and then the next day you got to boil it again. Why go through all that? If you don't want to just try out a sour, use Philly Sour. That's what I made this goza with. It can be, you know, just one level of sourness. It doesn't have all the depth and stuff that a, you know, kettle sour would. But, you know, you pitch it. It does the lacto, the souring process first, and then it ferments your beer. It's an easy way to, if you want to try out souring beer. Yeah.
Yep. All right. So if you could see the slide, what it's saying is boosting on top of flavors from malt, hops, and yeast. So have you ever hung out with your non-homebrew friend and, you know, you brewed a pretty good hefe and you're like, hey, try this hefe and enjoy the banana esters. They come from the yeast. And then your friend goes, well, why don't you just throw a banana in there instead? You know, you go, oh, I got to explain, that's not how it really works. You don't really throw the banana in there. However, there are some items or you could throw in that actually does directly give flavors and boost the flavors that primarily came from malt, hops, and yeast. For example, IPA, if you dig citrusy IPA and you want to punch up the citrusy part, try some grapefruit peel and put in a hop bags and steep it, so you're basically dry peeling. Now, you may ask, well, why don't you just do grapefruit juice? Yeah, you could, but I think you're going to get a much better result using grapefruit peel or orange peel or whatever citrus you're digging. And now, you're digging Belgian quads and doubles, and you really like that raisin flavor from your special bean, your aromatic malts, try putting in a raisin reduction. As for me, from Saisons, I like my Saisons peppery, so I'll literally put more peppercorns in it. Now, let's go to the deets of this. Keep that up there. Just for IPAs, several grapefruit peels in a hot bag. Only takes a day. Give it a taste test. To put a raisin reduction into your Belgian beer, you will do 3 pounds of raisins to 1.5 gallons water, reduce it down to about a quart, and then you're going to pour that in at flame out. So that's going to really boost the raisin flavors that you get from special B malts. On top. As for Saisons, I like to do three levels of it. First, pick a yeast that will poop out good peppery phenolics. For example, WLP 565. Then also add in a layer of a couple grams of grains of paradise, and then 1/2 ounce crushed peppercorn. So there, Denise, you would have layers of peppery good flavor.
Hot stuff coming through.
All right, on to Brew Day nuggets and tips on that. If you use a pump during Brew Day, a lot of you do, you know, to turn the pump on, you got to kneel down, plug it in, or if you're in a doing something over here and the pump's over there and you got to reach and plug that in, that's no way to live. Instead, consider the remote control power outlet. These things were originally meant for outside lights, Christmas lights, fans, but use the remote control. Just keep it in your pocket, and it makes it much easier on Brew Day. Under $20 on Amazon or somewhere else online.
Don't even have to get out of your chair.
Nope. So on Brew Day, you're ready to use your chiller. And you hook up the hose to the connection, and it's just spraying everywhere. It's got a leak. And you don't have the time or the gumption to fix that root cause. So the simple fix, grab a towel and wrap it around the connection. That's a Band-Aid. It won't fix the leak, of course, but it will redirect the water down so it doesn't spray into that wort that you worked all day to get right. Simple workaround right there.
Ran out of stuff? Well, you know, you can always go to your pantry or to your local market. Quaker, man, they have some great products, right? Ran out of flaked maize? Use grits. Ran out of oats? Use the oats. Even minute rice you can use for flaked rice.
Right. So all these are already gelatinized, so you don't have to be doing a side mash or a cereal mash on top. They'll go right on in.
Like Ron was talking about with the adding the grapefruit peel to your IPA, if you're wanting to add more fresh flavors into your Belgian wit or your Saison, use those orange peels.
Yeah, so use a fresh orange instead of the dry orange peel that you normally might get at a store. I just think that'll put more of that orange character into your skull if you use that. But what if you don't even have an orange in the refrigerator? Well, if you've got some Smucker's, orange marmalade works surprisingly well as basically a substitute to the substitute. All right, now here, I'll tell you. Here's a way to always hit your gravity. You know, you can do this all day.
Yeah, I know.
Is step one is design your recipe so that you don't put in flavor and aroma hops until no earlier than 10 minutes before the end of the boil. By You know, these days, a 20-minute, 30-minute, 40-minute hop edition seems unnecessary. But what this buys you, if you put your flavor and aroma hops in at 10 minutes or 5 minutes or flame out, simply using a refractometer at 15 minutes before end of boil, check your gravity. If you're too low, just go ahead and extend the boil. Do not worry about excessive bitterness coming from your 60-minute addition, because you pretty much squeezed all that bitterness out already. So you may wonder or ask, well, if I'm going to just keep extending the boil until I get the gravity right, won't I have my volume reduced? Possibly, but I'd rather have 4.5 gallons of the good stuff than 5 gallons of the thin stuff. So brew for gravity, not volume. All right, next slide is about one batch, two flavors. And you already are probably familiar with several ways to do that, including party guile or same wort, two different yeasts. Consider this technique. Brew 9 gallons of a big beer. You like big beers, right?
I love big beers.
I thought you did. 9 gallons of a big beer. 5 gallons of it is straight into your fermenter. The other 4 gallons, you'll dilute down to a more standard beer, which may or may not get you to 5 gallons for that batch. So, for example, you can use a Doppelbock, and then for the 4 gallons of that Doppelbock, dilute it down to make yourself a Munich Dunkel. But you may go, well, that Munich Dunkel needs a hop addition, whereas a Doppelbock doesn't, so how do I separate that out? Take a lesson from dip hopping. Take a sanitized flask, and during the boil, you will put some of the wort in your flask, about 1.5 liters. You will chill it down to 170 degrees Fahrenheit. That happens very quickly. Put your hops, your aroma and flavor hops, into that flask. Because it's at 170, you're not going to be extracting bitterness from it. And then you can return that to the portion when it's time to rack into your fermenter for the Munich Dunkel portion. This works also with malt liquor and cream ale, because after all, malt liquor is basically an imperial cream ale. So the whole story here is big beer, 4 gallons of the smaller, or 4 gallons of the same big beer to dilute it down to a standard beer. So Paul, time to start pouring some pepperoncini cream ale. We'll be talking about this in a few minutes. Right? Good?
This sort of thing ain't my bag, baby.
All right. Show of hands, who's currently doing brewing a bag? All right. Great. That's a lot. Show of hands, who does not do brewing a bag, but you're brewing the bag curious? There you go. Well, I've been doing brewing the bag on the stovetop for about 3 years because I live in Florida and I like air conditioning.
I thought you said you brew in the comfort of your driveway.
I say a lot of things. All right. Brewing a bag on the stovetop tip, number one, is use both burners. Even if you have electric burners, this can work, but you'll need probably find that you need to get a pot that's more wide, not so tall.
Like it.
So a lot of the pots that they sell these days are taller. You'll want something a little wide.
That's what she said.
All right. So number two, hold, if you're a purist for a brew in a bag, it's spargeless. I would propose that you hold back 1.5 gallons of your water. This is going to do two things for you. First off, it's going to make more room in your pot so you can put more grain in, and you indeed can make a 5-gallon batch on brewing a bag on a stovetop if you use an 8-gallon pot. Secondly, that water that you put to the side can be used for the poor man's sparge, which will increase your efficiency of your batch. So talking about that poor man's sparge, to do that, I have seen brewing a bag brewers when they take the bag out of their, out of the mash, and they'll put it on top of an oven grate on top of a bucket and squeeze the hell out of it.
What?
I find that very messy, and you are going to leave some sugars on the table. Instead, use a bucket and an upside-down metal colander or upside-down bowl if you don't have a metal colander. Put your bag in the bucket on top of the colander and just let it drip. With that 1.5 gallons of water you had on the side, you would have preheated it to about 130 to 140 degrees and poured some of it over that bag, letting it drip. No squeezing is needed. You'll probably have about 3 rounds of this, of pouring it with the poor man's sparge and then returning those drippings to your kettle while you're bringing the boil up. Just a little note, hop spiders, perfect for brewing a bag because they'll enable you to hold to keep the hops and adjuncts separate and out of your boil when you're done with that. So this slide, if one could see it, may make you scratch your head and go, what? So two things here, and this will significantly reduce the hassle and time on brew day. First, pitch your yeast the next day. Don't do it the same day. I haven't been pitching yeast the same day, I've been pitching yeast the next day about 16 years.
Yeah.
Been doing that. You did that too, right?
Oh, yeah. Do that too.
All right. Then, when you're done with your boil, your pot on your stove, take a lesson from the Australian no-chill method. Just leave it there. You don't have to deal with the chiller, ice, cold water. Just leave it there. And you're like, what about DMS? Continent of Aussies can't be wrong. You won't have to worry about DMS. What you can do, you can crack your lid for several hours so the steam can come out. But later, when you're done for the day, you can put the lid back on. Next morning, your wort will probably be around 80, 85 degrees, and then you can rack it into your fermenter and put it into your chest freezer or whatever you use for fermenting. When your wort's at an even better temperature, then go pitch your yeast when it's at the proper temperature for that.
All this knowledge is giving me a raging brainer.
All right. The next one we're going to be talking about is post-brew day tips. How many people own a carbonator cap? About a third. The carbonator cap is your friend. I own 7 of them. Its primary purpose is to keep your beverage carbonated, but it works even better as a mini experimentation lab or to prepare unique entries for competition. So what's going around right now is for your samples is the pepperoncini cream ale, and that was originally infused with pepper heat and a carbonator cap with a 2-liter bottle. Those two things is gold for experimenting with different flavors and combinations. For a pepperoncini heat, for example, 36 ounces of a good cream ale that you brewed, 2 pepperoncini peppers sliced open, try and get the seeds out if you can, and throw them in. In about 2 days, you got a pepperoncini cream ale. This is a definite fave at Beer Fest, and it did win a Best of Show in 2024 competition.
Yep, or you can also add chai black tea to mead.
Three tea bags to 36 ounces of mead does a mead good.
And also look at your down your international aisle. There's a ton of different fruit nectars that you can also experiment with in your beer or cider or mead. Oh, and also blending Diet Dr. Pepper to a sweet mead. Another Bill Edwards special?
The Hogtown Bill Edwards special. It meddled. Yes. Tinctures.
So I like to have different tinctures in my pantry of different flavors. Some of my favorites, vanilla, cacao nibs, cinnamon. I like to make them myself rather than getting the ones from the store, just because you can control, the amount that you use. Basically, just get yourself a sanitized container and a very, plain spirit like vodka or 151. just enough. You pour just enough of it over whatever you want to make your tincture out of, and then you have a tincture, you know, ready for you 1 to 4 weeks, depending on what you want to flavor to impart.
All right, next little experiment here, carbonator cap, big beer blending experiments. For example, try a ratio of a barley wine to a mead and make a terrific braggot. Pastry stouts, there's all kinds of freaking adjuncts that go into those things. So try your, you know, I have a fear of commitment. I don't want to do the whole keg into one flavor, so this is a way to try it before you commit to putting all these into your keg. Do it into your 2-liter bottle first with a carbonator cap. Pastry styles, try it with cinnamon lactose.
Wow.
I was looking for you for a whole list of grocery ingredients for that. Or winter bock, turn a doppelbock into a winter bock with Mullen spices. Try that out level. So barley wine, stouts, bock.
Oh, barley wine, stouts, and bock.
Yes,
man.
I know. You like big beers, and you cannot lie.
Oh, my quad, Becky. Look at her bock. It is so big. She looks like one of those Crispy Boys' girlfriends, but who understands those Crispy Boys? They only talk to her because she looks like a total beer snob, okay? I mean, her bock is just so big. I can't believe it's just so dark. I mean, it's like out there. I mean, ugh, gross. Look, there's just so much head. I like big beers and I cannot lie. You other brewers can't deny. When a brewer walks in with a really big beer and thick foam in your sphere, you get sprung. Want to pull out your glass because you notice that malt has class. Deep in the kettle, she's boiling. Those light lager yeast recoiling. Oh, baby. Oh, my God.
Got ahead of yourself?
Gosh, yeah, I did. Yeah.
Well, as the Garfunkel to your Sir okay. Mix-a-Lot,
yes.
you want to try to finish that?
Oh, baby, the gravity's flaring, and I can't stop staring. My homebrew club tried to warn me, but that Munich malt makes me so thirsty. Hey, brewers, brewers,
yeah.
Does your homegirl got the bock?
Yeah.
Drink that, drink that, drink that big old bock. Baby got bock.
All right, there we go. Bring it home, bring it home. Yeah, as I said, as the Garfunkel tier of Sir Mix-a-Lot, tip of my hat for that. But let's complete the mission. Worried about bottle bombs? If you brewed and you are keeping it in your keg, but then you added a fermentable sugar and you want to put that into a competition, you're like, this might be an issue. Because it might go kaboom with that fermentable sugar. Here's a couple things to first try out. First, fill one bottle of what's in your keg and just keep it out into at room temperature into a cooler with a lid on it. If after 2 weeks it didn't explode, you're probably good. But then open up that cap and make sure no undue pressure is coming out. If you do find that there is pressure, and it could potentially be a bomb, you can use a sous vide to safely pasteurize it. Have the sous vide bring a cooler or a bucket of water up to 145. You will put your bottles in first in that water, and you'll be bringing the contents in those bottles up to 140. Well, how do you know it's going to be 140? Because you're going to have an extra bottle with just water uncapped, and you're going to put a temperature probe in it to monitor its temperature. Once you bring it up to 140, hold it there for a half hour. That's pasteurization time.
That's fancy.
Fancy. Hey, airlock.
So, you know, anything you put in that airlock, it will get into your beer. So, you know, for when we first started brewing, we would just use vodka, you know, in the airlock.
Yeah. And I know they say don't fear the foam with star sand, but also don't want a shot of it either. Simple, clean bottled water in your airlock does dandy. If you want to get more fancy, food-grade glycerin, if you're going to age what's in your carboy for a while, because glycerin does not evaporate. Now, I wish you could see this one. This one is, Well, it's actually your slide, but.
Oh, yeah. So, like I said earlier, Ron here has multiple walls of bling, and he actually displays his bling on Tyrax. And, you know, that's a way for you to showcase the wonderful beers that you make. There it is. Oh.
Yeah, so it's a wall-mounted Tyrax, and, you know, looking out, no doubt, there's a lot of award winners in this room right here, future award winners. So it's just a neat way to go display your bling on the wall. Available at Amazon and your favorite online retailer.
I didn't come to play. I came to win. Now let's play.
5 minutes. Okay. All right. So we're going to go into just a few more slides. We're rounding the corner here into a few tips on homebrew club guidance.
So if your homebrew club, if you have an exec meeting that you use to plan all of your events for the year and make all of your decisions for what you're going to do, invite your club members to that. They want, you know, so they can see how the sausage is made. And you can easily find out who your heavy lifters are going to be. Hopefully you'll get some new blood that want to help lift the heavy.
Lift the heavy. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, they're going to out themselves. I mean, who you invite all of them, but the ones who actually show up are your future heavy lifters.
Oh, right?
A shame you can't see this one.
Oh, man. Yeah. Also, your new members, send them an email welcoming them to the club. Also, take their photo and have that on your website. That way, when you have your meetings, you can put names with faces.
Yeah, so even if your homebrew club is only 50 people big, having photos, headshots of each of your members does wonders for your members getting to know each other and recognizing each other.
And at your general meetings, wear name tags like they're having you do here. And just a question, you know, what's your favorite beer? Or, you know, if you're stranded on an island, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, basically it's the question of the day as a conversation starter. For your members, and you may go, well, I know everybody here, but it's not really meant for you. It's meant for your new members or people who aren't in that clique yet. It makes them a little more comfortable and gives them a reason to yap with you. All right. Charity support from a homebrew club that basically requires no funds. For example, river cleanups, street cleanups, blood drives, food drives. And think about this. Donate to a charity silent auction, a brew day. You are going to brew anyways. Go help a charity make money off it by donating it as a part of a package of their silent auction. Now, your members, they all brew, and they're going to brew great, but they also have different skills. Use these skills to teach personal development classes to your other members. For example, CPR, self-defense, beekeeping, cheese making, bird watching. We even had sushi rolling before. Mm-hmm. So your club, because of the people in it, can learn more than just how to make a good pint.
That's right.
And finally, if you want your club to have the good life, step one, sell beer. Step three, profit. Now, I mean commercial beer, of course, because we know you can't sell homebrew. But what's that step two? All right, yeah, that step two is a big one. So this quick tip is really just easier for me to just tell you, but it takes longer to do it. Step two is basically this. If your club is not already a nonprofit, become a nonprofit, a 501c7 or c4. You don't need to be a 501c3. Then you will get involved with some community event that would be happy for your group to sell beer at their event. Many states allow nonprofits to have a special alcohol license to sell beer. So you'll buddy up with your distributor so you can sell at that event, make a lot of funds for your club. Even better, community events will even be more anxious to have you if you go, well, we'll sell alcohol, and part of the proceeds will go to charity, and your club keeps a good portion of it still. So there is an article back in May, June of 2018 called The Good Life. It's still, for the most part, applicable. But if you're interested in the details on how to have your homebrew club make some pretty good funds so you can finance your little hobby here, check that out.
Darn, that's the end.
All right, so normally I was going to have a QR code up here, if you could see it, so you can download all the tips we just talked about immediately. We'll find a way to get the QR code to you. Normally, I was going to say, take a picture, it'll last longer, but then you're just going to get a blank screen. All right, so we only have just a couple minutes. If there is any Q&A, I don't see any microphone around here, but if you have a question on our quick tips or brewing or money matters or affairs of the heart, give it a shot.
When it comes to the oatmeal that you was talking about for brewing, coming from the store, what about the protective dusting coating that they put on there to keep it from clumping as it's sitting on the shelf? What do we do about that instead of just, you know, getting it from like our homebrew shop that doesn't really have it on there?
Well,
so to speak.
Yeah, well, you're probably going to use it quickly. I just never had an experience where that was an issue, the clumping. Maybe if it was stored for a while, maybe it would.
Well, I just didn't know because, you know, just like to make the oatmeal at home, it's going to get, you know, even creamier than what you want. So I'm just curious, what is that going to do up in the mash if you're sitting there just letting it just do its thing?
I would say, in my experience, I just use it as normal, as if it was flaked. I did not have to do anything different to make it work well. It did not give me a stuck sparge or anything like that, if that's what you're concerned.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Yes. Yes. Guy that I've never met before,
yes.
Right here.
Great. This was great. Do you use quick oats or regular oats? And same thing on the corn.
I know there's like whatever the standard. I mean, they got different ways, but the standard Quaker oats work fine. Old yeah, I did. I didn't. I wouldn't try. I've never tried any other fancy version of it.
Got it.
All right. Maybe just one more minute back there. Yes, lady in red, who I also have never met before.
Wait, just kidding. You referenced 501C4 and C7. Is
correct.
That specific to Florida, because you're a Florida club, or is that a...
It's an IRS. 501C7 is for recreational clubs. 501C7 is recreational clubs. 501C4 is for educational organizations.
And we're a C3, so...
Yeah, you went to a lot more work, and you filled out a lot more paper than we did.
Yeah. Okay, we'll look into those licenses, because that's intriguing,
a way to
raise some revenue and help some other...
Yeah.
Nonprofits in our community.
You're in very good position to get an alcohol license, especially in Florida. You can get 12 a year. All right. So we're just about to wrap up. My understanding is we are to tell you to make sure to do this QR code that's on in front of me so you can evaluate the sessions. And I think we're good.
That's it.
See you at club
night
tonight.
Thank you so much.